baby.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
A day that's not worth having.
tell people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Get some people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me what your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means, so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free
and proud and productive people. We sashay.
We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope you are well today. It's the weekend, so I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope that the weather this weekend will be accommodating for you to do it. But, you know, if you don't have to, if you really don't have to, just stay indoors. Stay indoors and make sure you protect yourself. That's what time it is for us. So if you have to, you do it. If you don't, you don't. You have to weigh that, because I'm telling you, you never know when you might come in contact with that, and you may not have your mask on, or you may touch something and then touch your face, your nose, your eyes. You don't know. I'm not saying be scared. No, don't be scared. Just be vigilant. Be aware. Be cognizant of what's happening. Stay safe. That's the bottom line. Stay safe and watch your surroundings. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Click on podcasts, and you'll see African Perspectives. Click on African Perspectives, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Still being worked on by my good brother, Brother Kwaku, to make sure we can have those available for you. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, and all times are going to give are Eastern times. Once again, this program, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and following this program on Monday and Wednesday is the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. The Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones. Monday evenings, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia with Brother Wahad from 6 to 8, followed by Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. On Saturdays, it's the Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition. The Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition from 4 to 6 Eastern, 3 to 5 Central. And then Sunday evening at 7. Once again, Time for an Awakening. At Sunday evening at 7. Monday through Friday, the Warren Ballantyne Show from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. And, of course, all of these programs are here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Africa for the Africans. Brother Mamani Taihembug, please go to africanfortheafricans.org. Check out the website. The tours for the first half of this year have been rescheduled. The one that was earlier for May, next month, this month, the 25th to June 5th, that is now in January. So the schedule looks like this so far.
Senegal and Gambia, July 24th to August 3rd. Then South African tour is November 20th through the 30th. And then the Ghana Repatriation Investment Tour is December 24th through July 5th. And then next year, Senegal and Gambia, April 2nd to the 12th, 2021. And we'll be planning other trips, of course, and Brother Bumani Tayemba does an outstanding job. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bumani. If you want to see video of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bumani. 2007. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. I will say something more about WeBuyBlack.com in a minute. In a minute. Renoco's trips October 5th through the 16th, Uganda and Rwanda. And then his trip to South Africa, October 22nd through November 4th to Kemet. So he has two trips, both in October. Go online to Dr. Renoco and look at the beautiful pictures. Both trips are around about $4,200. Bumani Tayemba's trips are about $3,700. Habesha, helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. HabeshaIncorporated.org. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org and make contributions to help with funding, and particularly of the Kashi Project, building a village. And they're doing it. You'll see the pictures. The walls are up and so forth. So, HabeshaIncorporated.org. Shrine of Black Madonna. Hopefully we'll be opening soon again, as well as the Greenbrier Mall where the Medu Bookstore is located. And I know my brother Gazimde Ajamu at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. He is up open. He has a coffee shop now at his bookstore. And just trying to make business happen, brothers. If you can support them, please do. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located right in the West End, right on Abernathy, 878 Ralph David Abernathy. They have We Buy Black products. They have the laundry detergent, all kinds of products. They have a big full shelf of stuff for you to buy from WeBuyBlack.com. They also have Afroletics, those sportswear with the African names of Olmex, the Dogon Starseed, and Heru, and the Rebels, the Zulus. So check them out at Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, 878 Ralph David Abernathy, right across the street from Soul Veg and the Westin Mall. Cafe, Us Lifting Us. Us Lifting Us, economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa cooperative economics. Or as we like to say, family centered economics. Their Thursday night broadcast last night had Brother Nururi, who is a gardener, talking about urban gardening. And in fact, because of this situation, these things are very important for our people. If you are on Facebook, I'm quite sure you saw a number of things on Facebook talking about that. Doing for self. In fact, my guest today is Brother Akil Parker in the second hour, talking about the importance of homeschooling. But Us Lifting Us, that Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night at 9 p.m. The number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Aha. Akaban Institute, brothers and sisters, Baba Baruti and Sister Yabaruti have been educating our young warriors, and they need our support. They seek no outside money, strictly us, because of what is being instructed. Warriorhood, preparing our young men and young women to take the vanguard, to take the lead. Akabin Institute. Make your check money or make your check or money order out to Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. That's Akabin Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia 30310. If you want to use Cash App or PayPal, the dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A-M, the letter M, and then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. The gathering is tomorrow. For the brothers, the time is 10 a.m., 12 to 2, and it's going to be live streamed. So for the brothers, you make your donation, and young brothers is only five, a donation of $10, young brothers only five, and you make it payable through Yahoo, through PayPal. Make it payable through PayPal at Yahoo. Baruti, Y-A-A-B-A-R-U-T-I, at Yahoo. Put Brother Circle, your name, your email address, so the streaming link can be sent to you, and your phone number. Sisters, the brothers start. The brothers start at 12 noon to 2, and then the sisters. So it's going to be a serious conversation, but it's one that you definitely need to be a part of. The sisters at 3 o'clock, you know, for the sisters. Okay, I can't open totally. So the sisters, $10 donation, $5 for the younger sisters, and that's PayPal again, yahbaruti at gmail. That's how they can keep an accounting between brothers and sisters. And so the information you're going to send is Sister Circle, your name, your email address for the sending information for you to get the link, and then your phone number. And that is tomorrow. Common Sense Security. And Sanjay-Haiti, that's Sister Gabrielle Ariel in Haiti, or some of y'all know it's Haiti. It is pronounced Haiti. And she is in the northeast corner of the island of Haiti in the rural area up in the mountains. And so she's doing phenomenal work. If you go to her website, Sanjay-Haiti, Sonjay-Aiti.org. They're dealing with education, healthcare, sustainable agriculture. Just doing beautiful work. Sanjay-Haiti. Inye Sesim. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. April 30th. Thus, everywhere over the earth where we find people crowded back by climate or conquest to bleak in barren districts, we see the change of human nature from gentleness to ferocity. Drusilla Dungy Houston. Quick note here, Drusilla Dungy Houston wrote a book in 1926. In 1926, the same year Carter G. Woodson started Negro History Week. Her book, The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire. She has a quote that is so most profound. She says, out of ethnology, archaeology, paleontology, anthropology, I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal of facts that Harvard or Yale or even cowardly scholarship in our race could dare not refute. So how can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past? Profound quote. Drusilla Dungy Houston. This is true, but innate and inbred temperance or personality determines the intensity from and direct which the ferocity takes. If confined in almost all cases, venting toward those that are closest. Proximity is a critical human interaction variable, especially for acts of love or hate. When released, however, we are able to see a person's nature. For there is a fundamental difference at the level of spirit between those who are naturally loving enough to continue to contain their frustrations among themselves as they work towards solving the issues to the benefit of all involved, and those who cannot relinquish their anger through reasonable meditation and find solace in a sense of self-inventing honor any and anybody, or everybody they encounter, except those they have good reason to fear a reciprocal retaliation from. Our story and their story respectively bear witness to this fact. Sadly, if those who are accustomed to venting on others come to oppress others and forcefully contain them in bleak and barren physical, mental, and spiritual places, then those so confined, once deprived of any meaningful active consciousness of self, will inadvertently vent their frustrations on each other in the same way as their captors. As victims of this confusion, we must find constructive ways to stop hurting ourselves, effective ways to vent against what forces us unto and against each other. Affirm, I do not vent against innocence. Affirm, I do not vent against innocence. May 1st. The eminent man who worked for the rehabilitation of Africa's intellectual personality deserved to be respected all the more because they had to undertake unaided the task of fundamentally remolding their own story, their own store of knowledge, which bore all marks of the colonial domination, bent as it was on deliberately refusing to acknowledge the intellectual and moral personality of African people. Ahmad Sekou-Touré. To start from scratch, from total ignorance of self, no, from even a absolute hatred of all that self seems and means in the context of being part of the general cultural fabric of an historical people, and raised to champion the righteousness of one's people's vision of reality in the face of all that has so maliciously worked to transform that gift into less than it is an effort deserving of the utmost respect, I say. This is not an old aspiration or vocation. It is not something we find only among those of our motherland's past liberation movements. We see these unstoppable women and men all about us today also, everywhere we find African people oppressed, which is everywhere we find African people. This courage to be free of the yoke of another's mind in the face of seemingly overwhelming odds and ignorance is indicative of one of the most honorable character traits African people have consistently offered as an example of what it truly means to be human, resilient. These eminent Africans should not go without knowing their worth to us. Affirm, I have risen to champion the righteousness of my people's vision of reality. Affirm, I have risen to champion the righteousness of my people's vision of reality. Ashe. May 2nd. We have dared to be free. Let us dare to sow by ourselves and for ourselves. Jean-Jacques Dessalines. People tell us we should forget about our homeland, our ancestors and traditions because we are much better off here. They tell us that being brought to this place saved us from ourselves by giving us religion and reason. They would have us believe that the brutalities we face here are no worse than those faced by others. And therefore, we should not overburden ourselves or bother others with feelings of betrayal or dehumanization. They say digging up lost memories is truly a waste of time and energy better spent admiring the beauty and the promise of this time and place. We are warned that devaluing into this past creates unnecessary pain and suffering and instigates a rage better off left dead. They say we must be patient as they work with white magic of grafting us into Europeans. They tell us that if race cannot be seen, racism does not exist. And if we want to remove race as our problem, we must first remove all memory of an African past. However, none of this reality makes any sense because without self-knowledge, there is no African.
If an African becomes culturally, intellectually, religiously, and socially European, he or she has to have been turned away from being African. Something has caused that individual to forget who she is. To be African, whether now or in the time of our ancestors, require the knowledge and practice of what it means to be African. Affirm, I am learning and practicing what it means to be African. Affirm, I am learning and practicing what it means to be African. The Enye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yeah, it's the 1st of May. May Day. That's right, brothers and sisters. It's May Day. The 1st of May, the Maypole. I remember as a kid, you know, they had a pole at this one school I was at that time, and they had the strings, and we danced around the pole, winding the string around the pole for whatever reason, I don't know, and didn't give a damn. But come to learn about May Day and its history, of course, it's very old. In ancient times, and I don't mean in African ancient times because we didn't do that, but European ancient times, particularly of Greece and Rome and so forth in that time, May Day was a spring festival. And one thing about the Europeans, as you know, they always engage in debauchery and orgies and drunkenness and lewd behavior, lascivious and lewd behavior. And that's what the festival at that time was about. You know, and then in the late 1800s, May Day became International Workers' Day by the socialists and the communists at that time. And they remember that a lot of it came out of the Haymarket Affair in Chicago when the workers struck and got a severe beat down by the authorities. Severe beat down. So that's how people perceive May Day today, unlike, say, spring festival of debauchery. They think of May Day as understanding the plight of workers, understanding what's going on right now to workers in the field of healthcare, not having enough PPE, personal protective equipment, not having enough masks and gloves and gowns that they need that are necessarily disposable, asking some of them to wear them. But, of course, if I wear them again and again, they would be contaminated, and therefore I could contaminate others and mostly contaminate myself. So May Day has a very deep meaning on this day, considering what's happening in the world, and particularly with those who have a responsibility, those first responders, which I was one of them as a firefighter, and making sure that we had body substance isolation to make sure that we could do our job effectively and efficiently without harming ourselves and without harming the public, the police officers, all those first responders, of course, the medical emergency and the EMTs and the paramedics. So this May Day, I'm sending a shout out to them, and hopefully that they will be able to go home. Some of the workers, when the situation in New York was so tough, there were EMTs and paramedics from around the country that went to New York to give a hand. One lady, I think she's staying in New York, because they gave her an ultimatum about her job, and of course, when she went to New York, she was going to get paid, not from her previous job, but from the hospital that she was working at in New York. So, May Day. I got a guest in the second hour, and that's Brother Akil Parker, educator in Philadelphia. But I know we talked about Kwame Nkrumah the other day, and I did have the speech by Nkrumah. I'm not going to play that. I'm not going to play anything right this moment. I'm going to one of the people who I have a lot of love and admiration for is Brother Conrad Worrell. Conrad is out of Chicago, Illinois, old 70s, 60s, 70s brother who's been in that struggle since that time, some years, and is constantly in that struggle. He is an example of an esteemed elder. He continues to do the work. He used to have a column called World's World, but now he's in the Chicago Crusader magazine. It's a weekly Chicago Crusader magazine. Go to ChicagoCrusader.com. And when you go to the ChicagoCrusader.com, click on the commentary page, his editorial page, him, Sister Melvo, and just a few other commentaries. But this one I'm definitely going to read, and in fact, it was dated yesterday. My love for African people. The remembrance of our ancestors and their redemption and our continued oppression in America inspires me to re-acknowledge my love for African people. This inspiration and love also caused me to intensify my work in the African liberation movement. The word love is probably one of the most used and overused words in the English language. According to most European definitions, love is a feeling of strong personal attachment induced by sympathetic understanding or by ties of kinship. And of course, we are most familiar with the usage of the word love in connection with tender and passionate affection for one of the opposite sex. From time to time, we also hear the word love used in expression and articulation of one's love for African people as a culture. It is without question that segments of the worldwide African community have lost all sense of moral and ethical relationships with each other and with other African people. This is demonstrated day in and day out by the increased number of African people participating in their own genocide, their own destruction, killing each other, mentally and physically abusing each other, stealing from one another, being dishonest with each other. And the list goes on and on and on. This is why the reparations movement is so important in the process of repair of the damages inflicted upon us. Internal reparations, the repair of ourselves. I can truly say I love African people no matter what. I'm echoing that. I can truly say I love us no matter what. No matter how frustrated I get with the negative behavior of so many of our people, I love African people because I understand that the creative force of the universe has endowed us to make the great contributions we have made and continue to make to the world in spite of all the things that have happened to us. A simple inspection of ancient Nile Valley civilization of ancient Kemet should cause African people to love each other. Ancient Kemet and the Kemetic people were the creators of mathematics, science, art, architecture, music, writing, law, governance, astronomy, medicine, and much, much more. The ancient Kemetic people produced wisdom that was written down in their language called Medu-Netcher. The Greeks called it hieroglyphs, but it's called Medu-Netcher. Medu means writing. Netcher means gods, the writing of the gods, divine speech, our classical African language, or what the Europeans called hieroglyphs. We can examine this ancient Kemetic wisdom in the Hosea, which gives us insight into how our great ancestors viewed life, death, human relationships, marriage, parenting, the use of power, God, family, and a standard of moral and ethical conduct. Reading the Hosea brings out all of my love for African people in the most profound and spiritual way. Listen to the words translated in the Hosea. Do not terrorize people, for if you do, God will punish you accordingly. If someone lives by such means, God will take bread from his or her mouth. If one says, I shall be right
by such means, he or she will eventually have to say, my means have entrapped me. The passage further states, if one says, I will rob another, he will end up being robbed himself. The plans of men and women do not always come to pass, for in the end, it is the will of God which prevails. Therefore, one should live in peace with others and give gifts which another would take from them through fear. These words were written 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, and their wisdom shall cause all African people to once again love each other for the greater good of our culture, for our people. Our love for each other and the wisdom of our ancestors should give us the inspiration and the motivation to rededicate ourselves to the continuing struggle for the liberation of African people worldwide. We have a responsibility and a duty to the Creator who gives all of us life, power, and health by building institutions and giving back that which has been given to us through the creative force of the universe. This responsibility and duty should inspire us to work harder in our movements, particularly in the African Liberation Movement and the Reparations Movement. I love African people. I said, I love African people because I know we have the capacity to return to the concept of Ma'at. Ma'at, truth, justice, balance, divine order, righteousness, reciprocity, and love, harmony. The seven principles of Ma'at. And by doing so, restore Ma'at to its rightful place in our lives. Once Ma'at is being restored, we can do as the Creator has done by giving life and power and health. By restoring Ma'at, we restore ourselves, thus giving us all the necessary ingredients to continue our work in the African Liberation Movement. Only through love can we survive the European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, better known as white supremacy, in its genocidal onslaught. I love African people, and I urge all African people to love each other. Ashe. Brother Conrad World, once again, get Crusader, ChicagoCrusader.com, ChicagoCrusader.com. Make it a favorite and check them out and check out his commentaries once a week. Love you, Conrad. He's still working on his book. I tried to get him on the program. Oh, LC, I can't come on. I've got work to do. You're true. So, Brother Conrad World, my love for African people. And I echo that every word. Let's take some calls. Let's take some calls. Anybody, let's take some calls. 404-453.
Hey, my brother.
How you doing? I can hear you, Wes. I can hear you. This ain't Franklin Jones show. This is Brother Oshie's show. I got you. Sir. I can hear you.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, man.
Hey, man. What you read was right on time, both
wasn't
of them,
it?
Man.
Wasn't it?
Especially the one with control of energy. Yes, sir. But look here, man. How did you enjoy that clip I sent you with Ali and Frazier on Dick Cavett's show, man?
Yeah, you know I love that.
Bro.
You know I love
hey,
that.
Hey, man, you should. I saw the whole show. They had it on Decades, man.
Okay.
Ali and both of them were spitting some knowledge, man.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the part when Ali and Frazier picked up that devil and what Ali said. Hey. This is our enemy. We me and Joe Frazier, we brothers. We ain't gonna let this enemy divide us. Remember Ali said that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Man, he was spitting some knowledge, man. If you could pull up that whole show, them brothers were spitting some knowledge. They did a little clowning, and, you know, to play the game. But Ali was telling the dude how much a devil he is, man. That was beautiful, man.
I love Ali. I love
man.
The wisdom, Muhammad. I love Ali, especially
yes, sir.
When Ali... You know, I loved him coming up as a young man, and before he joined the Nation of Islam, and I followed him because I wanted to box myself as a young man back in the day, and so I followed Ali, and then of course he won the championship, and his name was changed to Muhammad Ali. I loved him even more so because of his challenge to Caucasians in their face. I loved him talking back. I loved it. Yeah. So
Joe Frazier was smart too, man. Yeah. Joe Frazier was smart. He wasn't about all that talking. He was a thinker, man. He was a thinker.
Yeah.
Okay. That was Joe Frazier was, man. And see, I met Angelo Dundee, man. They all these slave monsters, okay, down in South Florida. I was doing some work in the building where his office was, and I happened to run into him. So he came up talking to me, and then he tried to play me, man.
Mm-hmm.
He said, come on up to my office, man. So I went up to his office. He had pictures of Ali, mm-hmm. Sugar Ray Leonard,
right,
and
right.
All these damn boxers. And he goes, let's check this out, Ocean. See, I'm kind of big, right? I'm over 6'5", about a couple, mm-hmm. 200 or 300, 200-something pounds. But anyway, Angelo Dundee tried to play me. Hey, bro, I want you to box. You can box. You about the same size as Ali, bro. We can make some money. He tried to play that BS game on me, man.
Yeah.
I said, look at here, Angelo Dundee. I'm not going to finna get knocked the F out. And you get the money, and I'm walking around all beat all up. Nah, bro, I'm
and
not
all brain dead. But listen, I do take issue with you, Brother West. I take issue with referring to Angelo Dundee as Muhammad Ali's slave master. I take issue with that. He was just his trainer. Yeah. Ali, in fact, we have no slave master. All we have is captors because we were not slaves.
Right.
We were not slaves. We were captives.
Right.
And so I take issue with that, but it's all good, Brother West.
But,
you know,
it's the words, But see, I'm just saying, he tried to play me, man.
Yeah.
He tried to run that boot game on me.
I hear he wanted out there boxing, man. He wanted you out there risking your life like he made big money. Listen, that was interesting. Listen to this, Wes. All those cats.
Yes, sir.
These are the cats that made money off Muhammad Ali. Angie Dundee, Ferdy Pacheco.
Mm-hmm.
All them cats made money. And I can't say to the fact of why the brothers
Don
made
King,
money.
Don
King made huge money. But his closest people, Drew Bundini Brown, mm-hmm. died broke.
Yeah.
I think his photographer, Brother Bingham, who is still living, he did well.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of those cats, man, that were hanger-ons, you know, once Muhammad Ali stopped boxing, and of course, once he died, all that was over, man. But those guys made huge money.
Bro, Ali was giving away money, man. He had a restaurant in South Florida, one in Miami and one in Fort Lauderdale, called Champ Burger. Bro, when Champ Burger opened up, I was right there in the crowd, man. Mm-hmm. Ali was handing out $100 bills, particularly to the pretty women, though.
He
gave away a lot of money, man. He gave away a lot of money, bro.
I know he did.
So, I mean, he got his blessing, man. Because we can't take the money with us, man.
Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali is a blessing to our people. There's no doubt about it. He's a treasure.
Yes,
he's somebody to be admired. No doubt. Let me take another call, Brother Wes. I appreciate it. Hang on.
Yes, sir, man.
414-504-507. Okay. I'll come back to you. 404-573.
Hotep family.
Hotep Queen, how are you today?
I'm well today, thank you. I'm so well.
Good.
So I would just like to say, the Medu Nature, divine words from heaven above, divine words that is not from men. What was the other one?
What, the Husia? The
Medu-Netra.
The Medu-Netra,
oh,
yes.
The Husia.
The Husia. Right, the Husia.
The Husia is deep.
Right.
The Husia is deep.
Right.
And, the other one that we get from ancient Kemet, the Medu-Netra and the seven principles, seven virtues.
Ma'at. Well, you know.
Yes, Ma'at.
Would you?
So let us continue to incorporate the Ma'at and Hotep to Brother Conrad Worrell.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing him back to us, to our attention. He's never left us. He's never forgotten us. And the struggle continues.
That's right.
Peace to you all.
All right, dear. Peace, Queen. Thank you. Have a blessed day. Hang on. I know she will. 919-768. Good morning. 919-768. Okay. 910. 910-237. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, my brother. This is Brother Dang in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
How you doing today, brother?
I'm very positive.
Good.
Good. I'm seeking a little info. I'm a friend of Bruce Bridges.
Okay, sure.
And haven't heard anything from Fahim Asante. You familiar with him?
Asante?
Yeah, Fahim. Wabina Fahim Asante.
Okay.
I'm not familiar. The book, Chains and Images of Psychological Slavery.
Chains
He's a psychologist.
Oh, Naeem Akbar.
Not Akbar, Fahim Asante. He was a psychologist.
Uh-huh. Fahim
and he had a stroke a little while back.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
And
okay.
We haven't been able to. I was just checking to see if any of your people or any of the listeners might have some info.
Well, if anybody does, listeners, please give us a call here if you know about Brother Asim Asante.
Fahim.
Fahim.
Asshanti.
Okay. Fatim Asante.
Fahim.
Fahim Asante. Excuse me.
Yeah, Fahim. He's supposed to have did the book on Willie Lynch.
Oh. Okay. He's the one that brought the Willie Lynch letter out.
That's what he said.
Okay, yeah, I think I've seen him on YouTube.
Right.
I didn't remember his name. I seen him on YouTube. I remember when it happened.
But if anybody can get some info on it, I like to pass it on. You can mark my number down.
Sure.
And shoot that to me. All right. You got a very positive program, brother, and I'm going to stay tuned.
I appreciate that very much, and I hope that you do, and continue to call in, and whatever you got to contribute.
Oh, yes, sir. I tune other people in also.
Okay, because whatever you got to contribute is truly welcome. I appreciate it very much. Thank you, my brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Peace. 919-919-864. 919-864. 919. Yes.
Yes. Good morning, brother. I'm just a new listener, and I'm listening in this morning.
Well, thank you.
In the near future, I'll be listening to the other shows that you have on.
Well, thank you very much. We have a nice number of shows and going to get more programming here on Time for an Awakening Media. And I'm glad that you are become a listener and continue to do so. Thank you for listening to this program. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a blessed weekend. Yeah. All right. 919-768. 919-768. Good morning. 919-768. Okay, you can do that. 414-504-507. 414-507. Okay. Well, we're coming up on a break in the second half. I'll be talking with Brother Akil Parker, talking about education. Brother's doing a good job of educating our young people in the Philadelphia area, and talking about homeschooling, and because that's what's going on right now. And I know a number of parents also too. What's going on right now is video schooling. Some may have the Zoom, some may not have, but they're trying to find ways to keep these students involved and keep them up. I know my grandson is in high school, and my younger grandson is in middle school, and they both have video schooling, not every day. I know my friend who was a teacher, and I was talking with her the other day, and she usually has about 30-some students, but less than 15 log on to the homeschooling, And now that they've been out since March, they've been out almost 2 months, and most schools is canceled for the rest of the school year. And for those who are going to graduate this month, they're planning the Mother Day weekend, which is the 15th, I think. They are planning a national high school graduation with a number of individuals, noted individuals that a lot of high school kids were like, singers and people, and somebody giving a couple of keynote addresses, you know. So they're going to do that. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take a break, and hopefully I'll come back from the break, engage in conversation with you once again. So continue to listen. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You stay with us. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Thank you. sode kai. I am Manuo. They call me the weaker. I am not one of you. I would like to make you one of us. All you have to do is just listen to my warmth. Then you will know why they call me Manuo.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Larry Graham, Graham Central Station, The Jam. Man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's something about Fridays, you know, even though when I became a firefighter, I had no weekends. I worked every third day. And so it wasn't like when I was working in the foundry or factories and so forth. You live for the weekends. You know, in fact, we got a couple of songs that we usually play on Friday. Johnny Kemp Just Got Paid Friday night and OJ's Living for the Weekend. Those weekend songs, they had to be pumped. They had to get you up, you know, getting you prepared for that weekend. All right. Once again, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central. Nope, we're not going to do that. Just going to run the rundown of other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. This program, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., followed Monday and Wednesday by the Black People Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. Monday evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, followed by Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers at 8 p.m. Eastern, 8 to 10. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturday, Time for an Awakening, excuse me, on Saturday, Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition, Black Reality Think Tank Weekend Edition at from 4 to 6 Central, excuse me, from 4 to 6 Eastern, 3 to 5 Central. Get it together, Oshie. On Sunday at 7 p.m., it's once again Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then every Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m., the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. The number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. My guest is part of the program, and those who are hanging on to listen, I hope that you will participate and have questions for my guest, is Brother Akil Parker. Brother Akil, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing good, brother. You can hear me?
I can hear you well, sir. I can hear you well. Good.
I'm doing well.
So how are things going in Philadelphia with the, are you guys sheltering in place? Are you staying protected against the COVID?
We're supposed to be. I'm doing it, you know, as much as possible. I'm staying in the houses, you know, pretty much, unless I'm, you know, dropping my daughter off, to, you know, her mother's house, or picking her up from her grandmother's house, or something like that. Or, you know, I went grocery shopping for the first time earlier this week. Since the pandemic.
Did everybody have a mask on when you went grocery shopping? I know you did.
Yeah, they did. They did. Good, you know, it was interesting. So I was trying to stay out of those kind of spaces, but I needed to get into those spaces. So and it was interesting to kind of see, you know, the different, the setup, you know, looking at the different, tape on the floor, represent arrows and the social distancing that took place when people were standing in line. It was 6 feet apart from each other.
Right.
That was interesting to see firsthand. Mm-hmm. And I hope that it helps. Hope that it works.
Well, it has proven that it has brought down the number of infections and, of course, the number of deaths. And that's why they're promoting social distancing. But, of course, you know, just like in Los Angeles, it was very hot this past weekend in Los Angeles, 100-degree temperatures. And so many people wanted to get the relief by going to the ocean, going to the beach. And then they seen a spike in the number of people being infected and maybe even possibly dying. And so the governor issued another restriction from going to the beach, you know. Because, I mean, to me, there's no doubt about it. If you would allow things to happen as usual, then you're going to get more people to be infected and possibly more people dying. That's why I felt that here in Atlanta, that the governor of this state, who was a shiesty son of a anyway, he opened up the state, and particularly in Atlanta, way too soon. And none of the states that opened up met the criteria for opening up. That means 14 days when things were constantly going down, almost to no hardly deaths at all during that time, you know, saying that we really got a handle on this. Everybody is still having people who are getting infected. The number of testing hasn't gone up either, which is the main key point to determine where the fight is and how well the fight is being won is through the testing. You know, they talk about, you know, testing a number of people, but yet they talk about, I think I heard 14,000 a day, something to that effect. They're only testing half of that, 7,000 a day. So there's still the issues that are happening as it relates to infection and possible deaths around this country with the COVID-19. Are schools in Philadelphia closed for the rest of the year?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
At first, the governor stated that they would be closed indefinitely. Mm-hmm. But then they followed that up with a definite closure for the remainder of the school year. So now different school district. So different school districts have implemented different policies in terms of providing academic practice for the students. And some schools have been, you know, they immediately converted to online learning, like right away. Mm-hmm. And the school district, some school districts have lagged behind in terms of that, which is to be expected.
Sure.
And this is, this, you know, school, compulsory schooling is all about social engineering anyway. Which can be good or bad. I don't think the aspect of social is bad, but
I look at social engineering as being bad because what it is saying to you, you follow this order, you know, you follow these dictates. And for us, you know, it hasn't been good for us collectively. For some of us, you know, it's a good thing because it helped them propel them into higher learning, propel them to jobs where they're working with Caucasians and probably implementing programs that sometimes do us wrong. But they got a job. They, you know, they followed suit, you know, so I understand.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, it depends on, you know, what type of society we want. Like, you know, what Julius Nyerere talked about, you know, in Tanzania, you know, when they were doing their anti-colonial work and trying to develop new school systems and new education systems. One of the things he said was, before we reform or change the education system, we need to first consider what type of society we want. And then that should inform what our education system looks like. Whereas, you know, in America, you know, we have a neo-colonial society, a monopoly capitalistic society. So that's going to inform, you know, what the education or the schooling system looks like. So that's why a lot of these so-called reforms are not really intended to work. They're never going to work because a lot of people talk about reforms and changes that are not suited to a neo-colonial monopoly capitalistic society. It's meant for a society where you have, you know, a few haves and a whole bunch of have-nots.
Right.
So you have to maintain that so that way the haves can maintain their power and their, you know, their domination over everybody else. So I mean, in terms of when I think of the social engineering, I kind of think of, you know, if we had a different type of more African-centered society, at least for ourselves, we were able to kind of create that in terms of independent nation building, which I think what education should be for all Black people. It should be about independent nation building. Then the social engineering would look very different because we're like, okay, well, now we're engineering, you know, so that we can have, you know, brothers and sisters, you know, reaching their full potential instead of brothers and sisters being undereducated and miseducated and basically underdeveloped. Because in a lot of my experience with my own schooling experience and then also like being a teacher in the classroom over the years and still to this day, I find myself thinking a lot about Walter Rodney and his analysis of how Europe underdeveloped Africa and how that type of underdevelopment, that proactive underdevelopment process, how it's visited upon young Black children and young Black children, young Black teenagers, and even, you know, Black adults. So we definitely need to, you know, get out of this mess. And that's why, you know, like everything is one of the things I say is like everything, nothing is all bad and nothing is all good. And even with the COVID-19 pandemic and schools being closed, it can give some of us an opportunity, not everybody, but some, it can give those that are equipped an opportunity to make certain provisions for their children and to provide certain things for their children that they wouldn't be getting in the formal school setting or in the public school or charter school setting. And even the parochial school setting in some cases.
And you're right about that. That this would be a great time to instill or infuse that into the child's educational process, knowledge itself. Right. It would be tremendous. And in fact, it should be. One could make the argument, of course, it should be ongoing. But we know that it is not. But the reality is that we need that. That's why I always promote Baba Baruti in his school, you know, Akaban Institute, in terms of what he's doing, you know, and there are many others such as yourself working with our young people, you know, because if we're going to get out of this mess, and we are, The main reason we're able to, going to be able to do that is the education that we're going to be receiving, particularly our young people, because that is they are the ones that are going to take up this fight. You know, I'm on my, way out, not really, but but in terms of I can have influence, of course. I'll definitely be there, definitely, you know. But the fighters, the ones who are going to do the battling, both mentally, spiritually, physically, and emotionally, are the younger people. And they must learn to be equipped with knowledge that gives them the armor and gives them the courage to go forward, you know. And that only comes through not through the public school system. You're not going to get that. You're not going to get it in parochial schools, charter or choice. You're going to get it through the independent schools. You're going to get it through programs that are geared after school programs, weekend programs. You know, I've said all the time, I know ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization, is a favorite organization of mine. I've been a member for many years. And I've said, you too? You like ASCAC?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've been down with ASCAC since 2013.
Right on. Yeah. And I've been to a number of the conventions and conferences and regionals. And in fact, I was in the Southeast Regional Conference in South Carolina back in November. But I've stated at the number of the conventions that ASCAC should be the educational arm of our struggle. ASCAC should develop a curriculum or a program just like the European Jews. European Jews teach their children. They may send them to public schools or any other type of school, but the responsibility to teach them about being a European Jew is theirs. And so at the synagogue or some center on weekends or one time of a week or whatever, they're going to learn about what it means to be a European Jew historically, theologically, or whatever. And so for us, we should learn about what it means to be African. And how we should begin to love one another, share with one another, and trust one another, and build with one another, so we can get ourselves up out of this muck and mire and this mess that we're in. You know?
Agreed.
Because it's only going to get more difficult, that's for sure. You know? So what are you doing now as the crisis continues educationally?
So right now, I'm basically, I already had a educational consulting and tutoring, private math tutoring business. And I kind of have I've ramped that up. Of course, with more students that I was tutoring in the evening, now that they're home from school, so I'm doing more daytime tutoring in online using virtual methods such as Zoom or GoToMeeting or Google Hangouts or even FaceTime. You know, if you know, young sisters and brothers have iPhones, and you know, we use FaceTime as well. So I've just been doing more of that, and also been trying to build a following. I've been using Instagram, so I've been kind of trying to meet people where they are. I've been using Instagram, doing live sessions on a daily basis, Monday through Friday, not a daily basis, but Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. where basically it's kind of modeled like a by request radio show. Where, you know, instead of, you know, you calling and requesting a song to be played, you know, you can go to my Instagram, my business Instagram page, All This Math, and like send a picture of a particular math problem that, you know, maybe give you some trouble. And, you know, then I see it on there, and then I might, you know, I actually work that problem out during my Instagram live session. Mm-hmm. So, you know, definitely trying to do that. But also, you know, I'm adding in, you know, my matter of fact, one of my videos is interesting. You bring up ASCAC. I had my ASCAC hoodie on that I got, I want to say 2017 when the national conference was down at Dillard University.
I was there.
I probably saw you there. Actually, at that particular conference, me and my son Nassim, who's sitting right here with me, you know, we actually presented together. We were co-presenting. Because he had done some work. So he had done some work in science, and he won, you know, the science fair project. Mm-hmm. He did some work with testing the different materials for flammability, different types of textiles. for flammability, comparing cotton with polyester, maybe some other, I think maybe only those two. So what I was talking about is how with our, the focus of our presentation was about just, you know, Africans in science and, you know, the future. Mm-hmm. And it definitely ties right into what I'm trying to do with mathematics, because one of the thoughts that I've had is, you know, if we use an education as a tool for nation building, for independent nation building, because we already nation build, you know, it's just that we're not building, a lot of us, we're not building our own nation,
right?
You know, or we haven't been, you know, even me historically, I've only recently started to try to focus my efforts on independent nation building, where a lot of my work and efforts were focused on, you know, maintaining this nation.
Yeah.
And like this type of nation building. But I think about Sheikh Anta Diop and how Diop was not only, he gets much more recognition for being a linguist and a historian, but fundamentally, Diop was a physicist and mathematician.
Right.
So I know in my own teaching career, once I found out that, you know, that Diop was a mathematician, then as a high school math teacher, and then also reading, you know, Intellectual Warfare by Carruthers, and reading the essay where he talks about Sheikh Anta Diop issuing the challenge to Africans globally, and, you know, African scholars to be
right.
Glory disciplined.
Right, to connect that discipline with Egypt, with Kemet.
It forced me to take my teaching position much more seriously.
Good.
And then it also helped me to realize that, you know, I'm only going to be able to do so much inside these spaces. Mm-hmm. You know, so the ultimate goal then became to work toward independent educational spaces, like many of us, like you mentioned, Baba Baruti, and even, you know, Marcus Klein up in Chicago with Freedom Home Academy, who was recently on Brother Elliot and Richard's program.
Okay,
I know, like the week before. But that's the wave. I mean, that's what we have to be doing, and it's got to become more mainstream. And I think, like I said, everything's not all good and everything's not all bad. But even in this COVID-19 pandemic, this is it can be more of a motivation for us to move in that independent direction.
Exactly, because the opportunities now are there for us to do that. You know, I would love for us to collectively or develop a link of those schools, like Baba Baruti School, the Brother in Chicago, and other ones that are around the country, to develop a national program. I guess for me, I recognize that this battle that we're in, we won't get out of it because we can pray it away. We can hope it away. We can wish it away. You know, we'll get out of it because we have done the work, and we have established institutions that will help us do that. That's the only way. You know, it's not going to happen by osmosis. It's going to happen because we made it happen. That we got together, we developed a syllabus and said each weekend, just like this Sunday. This Sunday, there's a Sunday school lesson in the Baptist church. That Sunday school lesson in the Baptist church is going to be taught in Milwaukee, like it's going to be taught in Atlanta, Los Angeles, Dallas, Philadelphia, wherever. The same damn lesson. So then why can't we develop a program and stratify that program for age groups and even adults? Because our adults need to learn as well, and have that program implemented. Get the mechanisms to have that program implemented in various centers, churches, wherever we can get a group of our people together and give instruction, and then have us develop on that instruction week upon week, month upon month, year upon year, until finally we have a great number of our people who are educated enough, who are aware enough to begin the process of going home to educate brothers and sisters. Because to me, the ultimate is African sovereignty. That's the ultimate. And we can't do that here, because here in America, it is definitely no doubt that we cannot be sovereign. You know, in fact, really, we can't be anything except for what they want us to be here. Collectively, individually, you can think about being whatever you want. That's fine. You know, because individually is weak and pale in comparison to what we could do and who we could be collectively. And of course, they don't want in this society for us to develop a collective mindset because it goes against what they are perpetuating, and especially for us. Because we have never been in a position and never wanted to be, they never wanted us to be in a position of having the ability to chart our own course, you know, collectively. It's always about, you know, we live in America. Don't you feel good that we live in America? The land of the individual. You have these freedoms. You have just as much. In fact, there's a lot of Caucasians will swear that we have just as much right as they do. Just as much possibility and chance as they do. You know.
Sounds good. In theory.
Yeah, that's right. It does. In theory. And of course, that's what they want you to think. That's what they want you to believe. That you, even though you had years and then years and upon years of the ability or the inability to access that or to be that, but that's what they want you to continue to believe. In fact, what they want you to believe is your fault. You just didn't measure up. It's your fault. It's not the system's fault. It's yours. You know. So, right. Yeah.
That recognition comes from doing the systems analysis. And a lot of the times the systems analysis has to be preceded by critical thinking ability. And that's another reason why I'm such an advocate for teaching mathematics and, you know, teaching math early and often to children. So they can develop those critical thinking skills. And once they have the critical thinking skills, then we get into, it's like two main things that I think will be benefits from developing those critical thinking skills. Young people understanding why we need revolution, or at least to start thinking in a revolutionary way thinking about creating a different society for ourselves at least, and then how to do it, you know. And when we talk about how to do it, then we're talking about, you know, using different types of equations and just being able to think mathematically. But I think that's something that a lot of people just lack the ability to, you know, think in a systematic and methodical way. So we become very reactionary, and we become very emotional in terms of our actions. But we just like, you know, right at this particular point in time, I just happen to feel this way. So therefore, how I feel right now is going to dictate what I do. And it's not, you know, because there's an absence of the ability to say or to be able to, you know, make an assessment of a situation, consider all factors, and then, in a methodical and a systematic way, plan out what our next move should be and, you know, how we should move and also consider what the potential consequences could be, and, you know, because then that ties into consequential thinking. So we have critical thinking and we have consequential thinking. I think consequential thinking is an aspect of being able to think mathematically, being able to seriously consider, okay, you know, well, what might happen if I do this? And then, you know, what might the result be of doing this? And then if I do this other thing, what might that result be? Mm-hmm. And I think that's all part of just having like a mathematical mindset. And I think also, again, back to that underdevelopment process, similar to like what one of the many things Amos Wilson said about mathematics being very political, mathematics education, well, all education being very political.
Yes, even definitely.
People, you know, brothers like H. Rapp Brown back in the day said that. I remember there's an interview entitled Politics of Education, where he's talking to Gil Noble. Back in the day, mm-hmm. or like it is when it was in black and white. Mm-hmm. He's talking about how political education is. And, you know, just, you know, it's just us thinking about that and how a lot of us, there's a necessity. There's a necessity for us, for our children and our youth to do poorly at math. And the central issue is never addressed in terms of when every school year, there's some new fad, new gimmick, to get poorly underperforming students to do better in math, when we're not looking at, many of us at least, are not looking at the reality that in this current system, But then this ties into the systems analysis that's required. But in this current system, it is a requirement for Black children to largely underperform in mathematics. It's a requirement because this is a zero-sum game. And once we start performing...
Wait a minute, say that again, because you said a requirement. Usually a requirement means that there is a benchmark that you need to reach, but you're saying it's a requirement to underperform in mathematics.
Definitely, because we have to underperform in mathematics as a collective, because then we can be taken advantage of. And then with this zero-sum game, I mean, then you have people that, are living in, Black communities, and, then other groups can come in and take advantage of them, because in many cases, we don't even know that we're being taken advantage of, because we're not thinking in that mathematical way, because we haven't been trained to think in that mathematical way. And another problem is that mathematics is marketed, as a subject and as a discipline. It's marketed the same way a product is marketed, the same way a movie or a TV show can be marketed, same way a restaurant can be marketed. It's marketed in a way as if it's supposed to be difficult and that it's supposed to be some exclusive domain of a small and elite group of members of the society. When in fact, if it's taught properly, any human being can master mathematics, or can at least become proficient at it in terms of understanding the rules, the theories, and the processes of how to solve math problems. But yet it's marketed to us as though there's some math gene. And if it seems easy to you, then that means you must have been born with the gene. But if it doesn't seem easy to you, that means you weren't born with the gene, so you shouldn't even try.
So you shouldn't even try, right? So you say you shouldn't even try.
Yeah, this is all marketing. And if I could quote, I always quote this brother. He's down in Atlanta, brother Wakesa Mazimoyo.
Oh yeah, brother Wakesa. Wakesa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Aya Institute. And when we were having a conversation, and he said something that just resonated with me. And he said, we got to take math back. And when he said that to me, some things really crystallized for me during that conversation. And ever since then, I'll never forget that conversation, because it ties into ASCAC, and it ties into Sheikh Anta Diop, and it ties into, Obenga, and, all our scholars, and Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben, and, Carruthers and Hilliard, and, all that, the work that they were doing to, bring Egypt back into ancient Kemet, mm-hmm. back into Africa.
That's right.
Had been taken out of Africa.
Yeah.
Politically and historically, right? And so it's like, okay, so we bring Egypt back. So we have to also bring back, in terms of the disciplines that we study and that we use to maintain nations, to maintain societies, and to maintain civilization, we have to bring back those disciplines too. Mm-hmm. And we have to be able to use them. Mm-hmm. We definitely have to be able to use them to benefit ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Math is definitely one of those subjects, and we gotta bring it back. We gotta take it back so that we can use that, to our benefit. And again, like I said, it's gotta be for the purpose of independent nation building.
That's right. That's right. Well, we got some callers hanging on, so I want to take a couple of callers, just continue on this conversation. I have as my guest, Brother Akil Parker, educator, mathematician out of Philadelphia. And it's a solid good brother. He's been on a few times before, and he will be as well in the future. Caller 646.
Nah, Oshi, I'm just on hold, bro.
Okay, thank you.
I'm just listening.
Okay. Looks like we got a lot of callers. Caller 414-504-507. Okay. I think most of the callers just want to listen. If you want to make, and I got a number of callers, so I'm going to say this. If you want to make a comment instead of me just going to you, hang up and call right back. That lets me know that you want to make a comment or have a question or a concern. Oh, here we go. 414-414.
Hey, Brother Oshi.
Hey, it's Brother LaRue Ned, Black Laws. How you doing?
the slaves. I was listening to his brother was talking about the education being political, and I was just reading Dr. Naeem Akbar was saying that the first function of education is to provide identity, and when that happens, that opens up the door for us to accept, be open to more education. But the idea of identity, that comes first. That's the primary drive that our young people have first. They need identity, and they're looking for it. And what they're seeing, they're not liking. And that's why we're getting the attitude from them that we're getting.
Okay. Brother Akil, you want to respond to that?
I mean, yeah, the identity is definitely key. I think one of the identities that is nurtured and facilitated in the public and charter school system is one that is one of a anti-intellectual, and basically it's that in a lot of these spaces is that of a nigger, you know, which is I feel is like a manufactured creation of, you know, this American society. And, you know, a lot of us have taken to like embrace that, you know, through different life experiences and different reasons. But I don't think you can realize your full humanity as that. And I think that a lot of our youth, their identity has been compromised. So people are just, you know, stuck in this like survival mindset where, you know, we're just living hand to mouth, and there's no real concern for, our like personal development and, you know, or collective community development. And we end up being very, rugged, individualistic.
Yeah. Well, you succumb to the American way. And of course, the American way is anti-African. In fact, a lot of our young people, a lot of our people don't want to be African. They don't want to be African. We have been so trained, so well trained to hate Africa, to, in fact, to think of ourselves not as Africans, but as some creation that Europeans have done to us, as we are now the new Negro. We're black. We're not African. We're black. Just like Caucasians, they who classify themselves as white, we want to classify ourselves as being black. And in that context, we want to all the trappings and all the things of being white. You see, just like I look at a person like Stephen A. Smith or Steve Harvey or so many others who are in the game, so to speak, and they love capitalism. They love the trinkets and the goodies that they were able to attain, not understanding that not all of us can do that, but a lot of us blame each other and blame ourselves because they believe all of us can, you know, but it's not designed. It's not designed, hell, for them, for Caucasians. This kind of system, this exploitative kind of system is designed for a small few at the expense of the very many.
Yeah. They want seats at the table. Somebody, not the table, but seats at somebody else's table.
Mm-hmm. Right. It is. You see. And so I look at our educational process helping us to instill in us like what I talk about on this program, independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. If it does not lead to that, to me, it is a waste. If our process to educate our children and our people does not let us begin to visualize and to think in a way of self-determination, liberation, and independence and sovereignty, then it's a waste. Because to me, our model on this program is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die, because that's the situation that we're in. Because when you look at the world, and particularly African people, what Dr. Clark said is so true. We have no friends. We have no friends. Nowhere on this planet where we are and others are, they're in a position to suppress and oppress us. And yet we continue to go, try to go along to get along. We continue to try to beg or plead and so forth. And stand. This situation, brothers and sisters, will only change when we unify. If we don't do that, it will never change. And in fact, our condition will consistently get worse. And our numbers as human beings will consistently get lower. You're going to say something, well, brother? Go ahead.
Go ahead. I don't know if I forgot the call, but I was saying how we define the problem is going to determine the answers that we get. And we think we're fighting racism and white supremacy, but we're really fighting slavery. And I think that if we understand that, we'll look at the problem a little bit different. A lot of us think that we are free, and if we believe we are free, then we won't seek freedom. And so I think that's where we're stuck at, how we define the problem.
Mm-hmm. Brother Kill?
We got to define the problem first. I agree with that. And sometimes a lot of times the problem is seen as like not enough, at least in the mainstream, is the problem is defined as not enough access to this society in its current form. And I think we can see that in terms of how, because we, you know, there are a lot of us that have a lot of talent and are able to achieve formal education, achieve positions, whether it be in politics, whether it be in the corporate world, whether it be, you know, in education, teachers, principals, accountants, doctors, lawyers, engineers. But if the goal is not, you know, again, we're back to independent nation building. And as you mentioned, sovereignty, then it, nothing really changes. You know, it's really just becomes these positions, the attainment of these positions really just become acts of assimilationism. And it's like under the guise of some type of integration, but it's not even really integration, because really it's just, you know, I believe that you have to integrate from a space of power. Like, you can integrate into a society once you are a powerful group.
Well, see, there was never integration. Integration means that you have what you have, I have what I have, and we bring it together. And we respect each other's gifts that we're bringing. That was never the case. What we had experienced was a forced simulation, a pseudo-simulation, you know?
And I think there should be a differentiation in terms of how we understand, like, you know, integration versus assimilationism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because that's what I see. There's a lot of assimilationism. And so, and then, you know, people get into these goals of, you know, representation, you know, having, you know, representation and, you know, and having seats at the table and all of these types of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to say that, okay, in certain situations where you may need to be strategic, and, you know, you may need to develop a strategic partnership, or you may need to gain access to certain resources, but that access to those resources should be for the explicit purpose of being independent.
Right.
But a lot of times what happens is you gain access to resources so that then other groups will allow you to do that, so they can keep an eye on you and keep control of you and keep us limited so that we won't be able to be independent.
See,
so it's like, I'll give you poor black people a school. I'll build a school in your community, and I'll be responsible for hiring the teachers. I'll be responsible for hiring the administrators. I'll be responsible for providing the curriculum. And then you can say you have this brand new state of the art school, and every child will have an iPad, or every child will have a Chromebook. But I do that so that I can train you how I want you to be trained.
Exactly.
I can limit your thinking. I can limit your understanding of the world. And I can, you know, dictate to you how you will think and how you will function as a human being. And I will do that in a way that is consistent with what I need from you to manifest my needs, not your needs.
Exactly.
But to manifest my needs.
And see,
we have to think of it like that.
Yeah. And they can easily do that because they are in control. even though we may have certain areas or certain cities or municipalities where we have a school board, and there may be some of us on that school board. It may be even a predominance of us on that school board, but yet it will continue to function as it has functioned when it was all Caucasians on that school board. Nothing changes. See, the education for us as African people must be education to handle power. What is power? Power is not voting, politics. Power is even not educational information, because, you know, that is flawed and inaccurate. Power is the ability to define reality. And we must define reality and shape it and fashion it in our image and interest wherever we are. Now, granted, the only place that we can be sovereign is on the continent of Africa. That's why I'm a staunch advocate for the Pan-African Federalist Movement and for Africa being one Africa, a united Africa. You know, I pay tribute a lot to Kwame Nkrumah and Thomas Sankara and all the many other Africans who believed in African redemption and African sovereignty and Africa, a united Africa, because they understood that just being a Nigerian. In fact, I heard it the other day on Elliot's program, where the brother from Nigeria, Biafra, he was posed a question: do you feel that a united Africa is important? And what he said was, yes, I do, but there was a but. And the but was, first, we must get our program together. We must get our country together. We must get, and I said to myself, no, not first you do that. No, we do that collectively. We're working towards a united African states. So we've got to come together to say, this is the moment, this is the direction, this is, you know, the learning that we must go through to achieve this common goal of Africans controlling their land, controlling their resources. This is what we must do, you know. And to me, if an educational process does not lead in that direction, to me, for us as African people, then there's a flaw. Because if you know, because
some more fundamental things that we can do as well. Like you mentioned, Osagie Faux, you know, Kwame Nkrumah. You mentioned Thomas Sankara, and one of the things that we have to realize is that, like, you know, in neighborhoods from city to city, state to state, all across this country, and I would even say, you know, even in the Caribbean and all throughout the African diaspora, there are, you know, young brothers and young sisters that have never even heard of Nkrumah.
That's right.
And never heard of Sankara. So that right there, so we have many exemplars that were Pan-Africanists, that were anti-colonial, that, you know, weren't just, you know, flunkies for the European nations and for the United States, so that they could, you know, have access to the resources of these nations. They were men, you know, and also there were women too. There were men and women that stood tall. Mm-hmm. And we're anti-imperialists, we're anti-colonialists, and, you know, our young people need to know about them. So that's kind of another one of my, you know, initiatives, is to try to, you know, like expose these people, because, you know, young people and even adults, you know, we want role models, you know, we want heroes. And I believe that from a person that has grown up listening to commercial rap music, I recognize that even in my own experience and the experience of my peers and my colleagues, is that a lot of our fascination with the music is because we were looking for role models. And as young Black boys, we wanted to look up to these Black men and identify with them and be able to say, okay, well, if that's the standard for manhood, he's one of my favorite rappers. Not necessarily because of his artistic ability, but because of how I perceive him as a representation of manhood.
Right.
And so, but if we have to replace those, basically have to replace those people, a lot of those artists, a lot of these athletes, with brothers like Thomas Sankara, and with brothers like Kwame Nkrumah. And a lot of people would hear me say that and respond, by saying, well, you know, why can't they have both? And I say, well, you know, that's fine, I guess, if you want to have both. But with some things, there are just very when the contradictions are too great, when you just have, you know, very contradictory figures, you kind of just, and I actually, the thing is, it's like, you know, I think the decision, I don't think it may not be up to us to decide who the exemplar is going to be. But here's the thing. They may, like a young brother in Atlanta, he's been exposed to, you know, a white controlled record distribution company may expose him to a young brother named Lil Baby. So Lil Baby is given to him as a role model. But Thomas Sankara has not been given to him as a role model.
Right.
Tamara Michelle has not been given to him as a role model.
But there's a reason why.
Definitely a reason why. But then when we give them those brothers, and then we sit back and we say, okay, now you decide. You know, it's kind of like the Matrix, red pill or blue pill. Yeah. Like, which one do you want? But all they know is that there's just one pill. There's just Lil Baby. And there's a bunch of other people that, you know, have a similar ideology and, you know, also from Atlanta and are promoting a similar idea about what success looks like. Mm-hmm. You know, and again, all it is assimilation, is, you know, chasing the bag, getting money. It's like, right. I want to be comfortable in society. I want to be comfortable on the plantation.
Exactly.
So I want to have a lot of money. So I say too, is like, and this ties into like, you know, the mathematics education as well. Like providing the young brothers and the young sisters with some different role models, some different exemplars. And then we don't even have to force them down their throat. We just say, well, look, you know, you're looking for an example of manhood. Sister, you're looking for an example of womanhood. You know, let me put you on to these people, and then you decide. You know, do you want your standard for womanhood, sis, to be Meg Thee Stallion, or do you want your standard for womanhood to be Asada Shakur or Ida B. Wells? Mm-hmm. You know, you decide.
Yeah, but
go ahead, Jay. 646. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah. Hold up to the brother. Mm-hmm. First of all, we have to establish something that we just don't seem to want to recognize and establish in this country. It's a white man's country. He has a right to do whatever he wants to do. He's never going to educate you to liberate and to have sovereignty. It's unfortunate that our people don't understand that. It's unfortunate that we try to integrate into, as one would say, a burning society. And where it is now, it's about to get worse. Okay, so we're in a position to educate our people. What are we educating them for? To serve master? To get a better position in master's house? Or to build something for ourselves? And now with what's going on in this country and the manner in which it's going to move forward, we better figure it out quick, because we're going to become nothing but wasteless eaters in this country, because they have no use for us no more. And if we don't decide to come together and do certain collectives, we're going to be in big, big trouble. Because remember, industries that are being destroyed are not well-paying industries. These are basically low-paying industries that are being destroyed. So now you have a situation to where, as our people who had jobs that were barely getting by are not going to have those jobs anymore. And we're never the first hire, we always the last hire. So whereby you have a whole situation of immigrants and others who are going to get jobs now before we will, because they'll be seen more inclined to work on a cheap. And now everything is going to become expensive, but based on the employment of a cheap. So, I mean, what you're trying to do with the math and all of that, hey, it's a good thing, because the one thing math do give you is the skills necessary to do deductive reasoning, to be analytical, to critical think, if you're introduced to it at an early age and somebody's presenting it to you the proper way. But I don't see the educational system in this country getting better. I think it's going to get worse. Based on, now they're going to try and figure out, what do we do to cut costs? What do we do to make it to where we can't afford these teachers anymore and things of this nature? Now do we go to an online model?
But that will, some will flourish in that situation, but the majority will perish.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening right now with what they're doing. Some students are doing good, and there's a whole bunch that they're not talking about that's doing worse than they ever
You're
have.
You're right.
But where are we at?
Yeah.
Where we are picking up the slack, putting things in place to now be able to take up the real slack and educate our people.
Jay, let me give an answer to that, because we're up against the clock, my brother. I appreciate that, Jay.
All right. Hotep.
Hotep, have a good weekend.
On mute, and good luck.
All right. Thanks, Jay. Go ahead, brother. We only have a few more minutes.
So, yeah, so if I could play the alarmist for a moment, I would say that based on from my classroom experience, I started thinking about this back in like maybe 2016. And I started noticing how, you know, a lot of the schools, at least in Philadelphia and probably in other cities as well, are being equipped with smart boards, so-called smart boards, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I started to think about how capitalism functions and how, you know, businesses are in the business of making profit and, you know, being the focus being on the bottom line. And I started thinking about how you may have, if you're in a particular any school building, you may have 40 teachers, let's say typical school building. Mm-hmm. Could be more, could be less. 40 teachers, those are 40 individuals you have to pay salary to, you have to pay a benefits package to, you have to, you know, be insured in the building in case something happens to any of those people. And I started thinking about how, again, this is an underdevelopment process, right? So it's not about the students benefiting from human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
I started thinking about distance learning and how with the technology that is available now, you could have a smart board, in every classroom. You could have students in the classroom and have some type of adult in the building, which is just really there in a supervisory capacity, maybe like a security guard, basically,
mm-hmm.
Just to make sure, you know, students don't fight, don't, you know, argue or whatever, like a non-teaching assistant, non-teaching aide. And my prediction is that the way of at least public education, right, which is really responsible for largely to create and maintain a permanent underclass, is that teachers will be phased out. That's my belief. My belief is that teachers will be phased out. My belief is that there will be distance learning, and there may be people projected. There may be people teaching somewhere or some
but
video. Some
but you feel, but there's no physical human interaction.
I believe that that's the future. I believe that's coming. Because I don't see why it wouldn't come. And when we consider the history of this nation, and we consider formal education and how it's been delivered, and then when we look at like COVID-19, this pandemic, and how schools have been closed, and how all of these online platforms are being heavily utilized, people are, you know, these institutions are paying attention to how the youth are responding, how parents are responding, how adults are responding, how teachers are able to manipulate and maintain contact with their students in classrooms. And so my belief is that, I don't know how soon this will happen, but my belief is going forward in these public schools and in these charter schools, teachers will be eliminated, or teachers as we know them will be eliminated, or there will be a minimal amount in comparison to how many teachers you may have in a building right now. You may have far less, a small percentage of those teachers that are present now will be present in these buildings. And
so once again, through automation, there is a decrease in human potential in terms of jobs and so forth, just like it is in transportation with driverless cars and trucks and so forth. It's coming to that. Brother, just give me some closing remarks, because I got to get out of here.
So to close, we should take advantage of it. We should see this, the school closures, as an opportunity to be motivated to educate our own. And we also, as parents and as adults, we should continue to or begin to educate ourselves so that we'll be able to educate our own in all of the subjects, in any and every subject that's needed for, again, independent nation building, not just assimilation, not just so our children can get good jobs working for the white man or the white woman, but so that we can educate our own and we can do some independent nation building.
I
think that we should take advantage of these school closures as an opportunity, and not just, you know, because I predict, I assume at least, that schools will reopen in September. I don't think that we should just act like, you know, this is just a fluke and, okay, we'll just be just glad the schools are open back up in September. I think that we should start, you know, this is another motivation for us to, you know, think about how to create and maintain a network of independent African-centered schools. And that's right. Key too, the fact that these that the institutions are African-centered. And they don't have to be large scale. They could be, you know, small right. scale, similar to homeschool networks that already exist and have existed for a long time.
Well, we'll talk about that on the next time that we get together. We thank you, Brother Akil Parker. We appreciate that. Brothers and sisters.
One more thing.
Sure.
Can also plug the Instagram page. The Instagram page for All This Math. Sure. It's
All This. It's called All This Math.
Yeah, All This Math. All okay. one word, All This Math. And I do Instagram live videos at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. So if your children or your youth or any youth you know, if they have online assignments that they're responsible for, they can send problems in to the DM or to my inbox. And, you know, I work on those problems every morning and every evening, depending upon what's sent in. And if nobody sends anything in, I still do problems because, you know, I have an almost infinite number of resources and textbooks and sample problems that I could go over.
Right
so,
on.
I just wanted to plug that.
Right on. Appreciate that. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a great weekend this weekend. I hope you be safe and be protected. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibu Hodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Peace, family.